Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of IBC Topics. Today we have our elder of finance, Danny Yu, on the show. Hey Danny.
Hi everyone, hi Gabe.
Hey, so how we start off with every episode, we wanted to just be able to hear your testimony. So if you could just take the next couple of minutes talking about how you came to faith, if you could just name some people that have impacted you in your spiritual walk, how you met your wife, Chris, and how you ended up at IBC.
Sure. So how I came to faith, I think it's a pretty typical story for a lot of folks at IBC. Grew up in the church. I can't remember a time where my family and I weren't at church. Now that being said, like many of our brothers and sisters at church, I don't know that I was a Christian at a very early age, but I certainly had a lot of, Christian influence growing up. Church was actually a really mixed bag for me, in the sense that, my parents went to a lot of different types of churches. So, so at one point, I think we were going to like a Methodist church. Majority of my youth, I was probably going to a Presbyterian church.
Oh, interesting.
But then in college, I went to a Covenant church. So I have a lot of kind of different kind of backgrounds in terms of my Christian kind of experiences. How I came to faith, I usually say I have two bookends to it. In junior high, I remember going to a church camp. And that was the first time I actually kind of expressed, like, yes, I want to put my faith in Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And that was junior high-ish. Mm-hmm. That's my first bookend of kind of where I was probably saved. And then, the other bookend is definitely in college. And in college, I remember specifically just kind of at church one day, we were singing Amazing Grace, and I just broke down in tears. I think the line, that he saved a wretch like me, it just, that weight of that just destroyed me. And so I think for me, that was a clear indication about me understanding what grace was, what salvation was, that what I was being saved from. So those are my two bookends. Over the years, upon reflection, it was probably closer to that college bookend that I would say. I mean, I look back and, it's hard to tell whether it was just immaturity or there was just no fruit, junior high school years. But, I can definitely remember when I first went to college, it was important to me that I find, a fellowship group. Now, that being said, it actually took me a while to kind of land somewhere in college. I think I was very distracted by just school and just friends and things like that. And so church itself wasn't a priority for me. But as college went on, I did be more committed to a fellowship group. I went to AACF at Cal. I was more committed to a church. And then again, that's kind of where I grew most, definitely. And so I think that's kind of how I came to faith. I can't really say there was like an exact day or time that I can remember specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But I know like over time, I definitely, came to faith. And yeah, I mean, I can, that's where I put the second bookend in college, and I can definitely see signs of growth in college. I was, again, being committed to a church, being committed to the fellowship group, having like accountability and small group and, serving and all those fruits that really kind of, bore out during my college years. An interesting thing is, after college, I went actually away, for a year doing an urban missions thing. And, I actually got baptized, then. And, I spoke earlier that, you know, I had a kind of a Presbyterian upbringing, and, you know, so I was baptized as a child, but interesting enough, you know, I kind of developed my own conviction, and I was baptized, you know, after college, because, you know, I came to realize that, hey, if I'm going to call myself a Christian, and then I myself need to be the one to, you know, obey the command to be baptized. I can't rely on something that my parents did for me. And so, you know, again, another kind of example where I believe that, you know, I developed these convictions, developed these, you know, beliefs, and really solidified, who I was as a Christian. So, yeah, that's kind of how, you know, I came to faith. I definitely remember in college, when I was I guess I was a junior in college. There was a discipleship group, and it was probably the first formal discipleship thing that I've been in. Like growing up, I was in like youth group and things like that. I used my youth group leaders, and certainly that is a formal form of discipleship. But I think in college we had, you know, the formal discipleship, pairing kind of, an older classman with a younger classman. And there's this group, that, I was a part of. And, you know, I think that was pretty influential for me in terms of, you know, how to be a leader. Because we were junior, my two friends and I, were juniors, and, this older brother was, you know, kind of, he was a senior, he was graduating, he was kind of mentoring us and discipling us as we would kind of step into that, you know, that next year of being leaders. And so, you know, that was pretty influential to me. Side note about that, my discipler at the time, his name was David, he later discipled another brother named Paul, not with me at the same time. But so, then that Paul ended up discipling Andre Chipta.
Okay.
So if you look at the family tree, yeah, I'm kind of like Andre's spiritual uncle there. yeah, so that was one influential person. I think, you know, more recently, I'll get to that in a second, but how I met my wife, we actually did meet in college. I was a senior while she was a freshman, actually. So I say this, we met, and by meeting, I'm saying we literally met. Hello, how are you? My name is. It was more than that. We were part of the same fellowship group, AACF, and so we did interact, although I was a senior and she was a freshman. So in terms of school, we only overlapped a year. But then over the years, we kind of crossed paths over and over again. Because of the same fellowship group, we did have mutual friends, and we would always cross paths, and we would always end up at weddings together. Not like as dates, yeah. But we would go to the same weddings because we had mutual friends. And so there, you know, that kind of happened more and more frequently over time. And then, by that time, actually, she was still in San Francisco, working, and I had moved down to LA and I was in law school at the time. And you know, as we got to see each other more often, I think we, you know, start talking more and just kind of, communicating more. It was long distance. I think over time we kind of just communicated more, at that time, just, you know, email, and, I don't even know if we texted at that time. We chatted, if you remember, for those of you who, I don't know, do people still use GChat? Is that still a thing? I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
So we would do that. Long story short, we ended up dating, all long distance.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we eventually, you know, got married, and then I moved her down to the Los Angeles area. Mm-hmm. So that kind of slides into how we came to IBC. As we got married, we wanted to find, you know, a church together here in Los Angeles. At the time, I had been going to New Song, L.A.
Oh, I didn't
know. Here in L.A. Hmm. Yeah, and I think we were looking for kind of a little bit different church mm-hmm. than New Song, and we heard about IBC actually through Chris's brother. Many of you might know David's son, who pastors up at Pillar. He's actually mm-hmm. spoken at our church, and he said he knows a guy he went to Riverside with. And he's apparently goes to a church, in the Santa Monica area, that guy being David Che. And so, yeah, we checked out IBC. It was, I think, we were looking at different churches at that time. You know, IBC, is very friendly. You know, there was a lot of people who welcomed us and, you know, we felt, you know, very welcome, very kind of, it was immediate, kind of the love that people had for us. And so, that was about 2010-ish, right after we got married. Mm-hmm. Another kind of interesting thing is, that was right when, Nam came back from his, illness.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a unique experience for us. I think the first Sunday we visited IBC, either Gary or Dave was preaching, but that was the first Sunday literally that Nam was back. And I think a lot of people were very emotional that day.
Yeah, yeah.
But for us, it was just like this, you know, this, you know, one of the associate pastors speaking. And, why it was actually unique for us is that we got to hear Gary and Dave speak early on. And then eventually we got to hear Nam, you know, take the pulpit. And so that was good for us. It was again, a very unique experience where we got to hear all three of our preaching pastors kind of, you know, at the pulpit. And so, yeah, we then, took membership and, eventually became members. Probably around 2011.
Mm.
Oh, and that leads to, you know, one of the, one of the other influential people, I think, is probably, you know, our pastors. And I, to this day, I remember, an equip hour, or actually back then it was called second hour, that, Gary did. And, it was about conviction. And, I just really remember, that series and Gary talked about convictions and we need to know what we believe in and things like that. And I think that's you know, stuck with me, you know, to this day, and how I, you know, approach my Christian life. And even if there's things that I might not have fully developed convictions, I know that that's kind of the direction I want to head and really like study on a topic or, research a topic and kind of develop those convictions and, I could talk with the pastors. I could talk with, you know, other brothers and sisters to really see kind of their point of view and kind of develop my own kind of beliefs on certain issues. So, Gary was certainly influential early on in my experience at IBC.
Mm. So, as I had alluded to earlier, you are the elder of finance at IBC. And so I know, especially with this whole, lockdown and, it's a very, for financially, I mean, I know it's a very difficult time for a lot of people out there. But as you were alluding to with convictions, financial convictions is so important. Being good stewards with what the Lord has given us. If you could just share with us some important principles or values to personal finance from a Christian perspective. I know a lot of guys, you know, they listen to like Dave Ramsey or things like that. But more than just the numbers, is there, certain principles or convictions or values that Christians should consider when they're dealing with their own money?
Yeah. by the way, I also am one of those folks who listen to Dave Ramsey. And so I certainly appreciate his philosophy on money and how to handle mm-hmm. money, especially for personal finances.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say this, I do disagree on some of his, doctrine. And mm-hmm. so, I would affirm that he's a believer mm-hmm. and he is, he is a Christian. Certainly he's a professing Christian and nothing to me indicates otherwise, but I think there's just slight things that, he teaches that I just slightly disagree with. So, if you're listening out there, feel free to get your financial advice from Dave Ramsey. I do believe he has kind of a biblical perspective yeah, yeah. on that stuff, but I wouldn't get your doctrine from him necessarily. So in terms of how, I view kind of, principles of personal finances, and especially as a Christian, I think the first place I start with is, what is sin and what is not sin when it comes to personal finances.
Mm-hmm.
Before we jump to the wisdom part, which we'll do in a second,
okay.
but I think the first part or the first place that I would start was, okay, what are things that the Bible says that I can do, or not even that I can do, that's kind of the wisdom part. What are the things that the Bible says that I must do mm-hmm. or that I am forbidden to do?
Oh, interesting. Uh-huh.
So, I that's kind of where I start. And in terms of what I am commanded to do in the Bible and with respect to finances, I think there's the obvious one is giving to the church. I think that's a practical one.
Mm-hmm.
We are commanded to give, cheerfully, without compulsion to the church and to the ministries. So there's that one. Also, a big one, not directly related to finance, but it's kind of overbroad, is just not having, money as an idol,
mm.
There's certainly, the love of money is the root of all evil. You can't serve two masters. I think, mm-hmm. There's this idea of idolatry, and again, idolatry doesn't have to be limited to money. It could be, your family, it could be comfort, it could be, prestige, it could be a lot of these things. And,
mm-hmm.
What's interesting is, if we think money is an idol in our lives, or we kind of tend to think that way, we might want to dig deeper to think why it is that we feel that way. What I'm trying to say is, it might not be that money in and of itself is the idol that draws our heart. It's probably what money can do for us that is the idol that draws our heart.
Mm-hmm.
So is it that it brings us power? Is it that it brings us control or comfort or mm-hmm. security?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not it's not necessarily the money in and of itself that's the idolatrous object there,
mm-hmm.
but it's what's behind that. What does money bring me? What does mm-hmm. money give me?
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And so there's certainly idolatry and we want to guard ourselves from that when it comes to our personal finances. We don't want to, work so hard because we want to gain wealth at the expense of, our worship for God, neglecting mm-hmm. our families, neglecting our church, neglecting our own spiritual lives, and things like of that nature. Another thing is I think just again, kind of a broader principle is, not to cheat, not to lie, mm-hmm. and for those, who transact in money and in business, just in our workplaces
mm-hmm.
in general, we want to be, people of integrity. We want to make sure that, we're being honest in our dealings. And so, not lying, not cheating, and just being just upright in terms of how we try to earn our money. So, I think those are the three major categories that I thought of in terms of maybe sinful and not sinful areas. But then you slide into kind of what are wisdom issues,
mm-hmm.
right? And how can I be a good steward of the resources that I have? And so that's where it gets, you know, a little bit more difficult to say. I can't say to another brother or sister, hey, this is how I think you should spend your money.
Mm, sure. Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a sinful issue, unless it's a sin issue. Mm-hmm. Like I can approach someone and say, hey, if you're not giving to the church, let's look at kind of what the Bible says about
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, hey, you already have an iPhone 11, why are you standing in line for the iPhone 12? Is that a sin issue? I mean, maybe it could be. If it's idolatrous,
mm-hmm.
maybe. But I'd be very careful before I make that leap. Mm. And maybe it's just a wisdom issue, and it's a freedom that, you know, someone has to exercise that. So that's where, you know, the wisdom part, it gets a little bit difficult to say something is right or wrong. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I certainly have my own views on things, and that might work for you, that might not work for you. I think the major one that, that probably comes up a lot is, you know, debt. And how to use yeah. debt, or whether debt is good or not, or yeah. good or not. And again, I don't know that, you know, the Bible says that it's sinful to be in debt or to carry debt. I know there's wisdom literature that says, you know, we shouldn't be in debt. I believe Proverbs 22:7, you know, says the borrower is the slave of the lender. Again, that's wisdom literature. So it's not to say that you're sin if you are in debt, but certainly there's wisdom there
mm-hmm.
Of what debt does. And I think as a practical matter, you do have, you know, making those payments, or, you know, that does bind you in many ways. I will say this. I think one area that I do believe might be might cross over into the area of sin is not paying off your debts. And before I go on any further, I understand that there are circumstances sometimes either out of our control, like yeah. a pandemic, you know, or,
yeah.
Maybe we are victims of, you know, fraud, or we are the victims of theft. And so there are certainly things out of our control. But, you know, when we are promising to pay something and we don't pay it, arguably that's breaking a promise, right? I've said that I will do this to you, brother, or, you know, to you, Gabe, or to the bank. I promise I will pay you X amount of dollars. And then I don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Arguably, that's breaking a promise. That could cross over the area of sin. And I mean, just as a kind of a practical matter, you know, it saddens me when I hear kind of these wealthy pastors or whatever, you know, maybe not for the right reasons, but, you know, they declare bankruptcy, mm-hmm. right? And it saddens me because the witness and the testimony that brings is so damaging,
sure.
that yeah. they would kind of live a lifestyle in such a way where, you know, maybe it's a little bit, you know, overly extravagant or too lavish for what they can do. And then they declare mm-hmm. bankruptcy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's that air of hypocrisy there, like, you know, and so that saddens me. Because it just hurts the testimony of the gospel that that Christians would live in such a way that, you know, is not honoring their word. So other wisdom issues, you know, even how much to give to the church, I think is a wisdom issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could talk about tithing and offering. I think, you know, tithing is an Old Testament principle, and I think it's certainly a good principle, but I don't think we're commanded to tithe in the strict legal sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we are commanded to give. And so, but that is a wisdom issue of, well, how much do I give? You know, and a lot of times I get the question, you know, of, well, you know, let's say I want to use the tithing principle and I want to say 10%, which, by the way, our family does. We use, that's kind of our guide post in terms of, you know, where we start in terms of how we consider giving to the church. Mm-hmm. So I'll have others that might ask, okay, yeah, I want to use that principle too. I want to use a 10% principle. Well, you know, should I be doing that off of gross or should I be doing that off of net? Should I be doing that before taxes? Should I be doing that after? You know, mm-hmm. And to me, that question kind of reveals something to me, and that's, you know, your approach to giving shouldn't be so technical mm-hmm. and so, you know, legalistic, to, you know, to where you are counting by the dollar or to the penny. But it really should be, you know, give what you feel convicted to give. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, mm-hmm. we should give cheerfully. I think we should give sacrificially, not out of compulsion. You know, and it's not the amount. The two examples I can think of in the Bible are, you know, the poor widow gave two pennies. It was all of, you know, nearly all or all of what she owned. And does it matter, you know, that it was just two coins? No. Does it matter that it was all that she owned? Not necessarily. I think it goes to our heart. I mean, the other example, kind of the negative example that I think of is Ananias and Sapphira, where they give a lot. They give, you know, they sell a whole lot of land and they give, you know, I would assume a vast majority of those proceeds to the church. Mm-hmm. But they lie about it. They say, yes, this is everything that we've earned from this lot of land and we're giving it to the church. And I believe it's Peter who says, are you sure? You know, kind of gives them a way out. And they still lie about it anyway. Yeah. You know, and they're struck down. So, again, you know, the amount that we give is not, you know, tied to some magic formula of what is holy or what is not holy, what is right or what is not right. But it's a wisdom issue of how much you want to give. Yeah, so I mean, we can maybe go into some other things as we have this conversation, but yeah, there are a lot of wisdom issues I think when it comes to personal finance.
You were mentioning tithing is one of those base principles, I guess you could say, that you've established for your family. I don't know if you mind sharing with us some personal or financial convictions or traditions that you have established over the years with you and your kids. Or just between you or Chris, or with the kids also?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, we can start with offering. I think for our family, we start with tithing principles. Again, that's just kind of our guide. We will go up or down based on kind of, you know, the needs that we see or, you know, the different ministries that we want to give to. But our primary kind of giving is to the church. And so we give a portion to the church. We do, try to support other churches as well. Just churches that we know, either that we, you know, we've become familiar with or that we have friends in. So we try to support other churches. We try to support other ministries and missionaries. We actually have a thing where we budget for hospitality. So, in our budget, we actually have a line item, if you will. Well, not even if you will. We have a line item for hospitality.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And, so we, you know, we budget for every month, you know, X amount of dollars for the specific purposes of hosting or, you know, getting together and, you know, doing that. A lot of this, you know, generally speaking, we, you know, our family does budget, you know, and, my wife and I get together once a year, usually to kind of go over what, you know, what we anticipate for the next year. And so that's where we'll talk about how much we want to give to the church, how much we want to budget for hospitality, what missionaries that we want to support. So those are the things that we kind of discuss, at least in terms of kind of the ministry related things that we give to. So we want to pass some of that along to our children. And, let's see, our older two are, they're 8 and 6. We do give them an allowance. But a funny story is, some of us might remember a couple of years back when, Don Whitney was our speaker at, family camp. Dr. Whitney was telling a story about when he was a child, he would get, 3 nickels. And the nickel, you know, 5 cents would go to one nickel would go to savings, 1 nickel would be for him to spend, and 1 nickel would go to church. And Chris and I heard that story from Dr. Whitney, and we were laughing, you know, kind of silently laughing in our chairs, because that was exactly what we did for our children. But the reason why we were laughing is because we gave them a nickel this many years later. So, you know, Dr. Whitney, he's a veteran saint, we'll call it, you know, if you will. But yet this many years later, our kids were getting the same allowance that he was getting as a child. So after that, we actually, you know, we increased their allowance all the way up to 30 cents a week. So, oh, wow.
Double.
Again, it's not the amount. I think it's the principles that we want to convey. We have 3 jars for them. And so we tell them, you know, one goes into your savings, one goes into your spend jar, and one goes into your give to the church jar. So again, we want to get them into the habit and understanding that, you know, when they have money, one of their priorities should be giving to the church. So that's one thing we do with our children. I mean, other things that we do, again, maybe not so much kind of, you know, related to giving to the church or ministry. I mean, just on a practical level, I mentioned budgeting. We do that every year. And we have a spreadsheet that tracks kind of our spending as we go along in the year. And, you know, we will talk about it, you know, throughout the year to see how we're doing in terms of our spending and our tracking. We're pretty open about kind of what we spend, in terms of like us communicating with one another. You know, there's, you know, hey, I want to buy this, or hey, I'm thinking about buying that, or things like that. So we're pretty open on communication on that stuff. I mean, I know other married couples will have something where it's like, you know, anything over $50, you need to check in with your spouse, or anything over $100, you need to check in with your spouse. I don't think we necessarily have a set limit or a set minimum or anything like that. I think we're just maybe overly communicative of that stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think both of us feel the freedom to buy a pack of gum or whatever. And I think just kind of, you know, within reason, we just check in with each other and kind of get each other's input on that stuff. I don't know that kind of developed organically more than anything. I think we over the years, you know, that kind of happened. You know, I will say this. One thing that we did early on our marriage, was we did a Bible study together on finances. So we did a Bible study, from Crown Financial. I don't know what it is now. It's some iteration of Crown now. It was a DVD and a workbook. And so we did that together, as a married couple. And I thought that was very helpful for us. Now Chris and my general philosophy on personal finances were pretty similar to begin with. So in that sense, that was, that was kind of easy. But what I appreciated about kind of going through that with her was just making sure that we were on the same page.
Mm.
You know, the Bible study itself kind of goes through, biblical principles of how to handle finances. You know, it talks about, you know, what is money and how to be a good steward. It talked about, giving to the church as your first priority, you know, debt and, you know, getting out of debt, saving, you know, spending, all these things, and just kind of prioritizing them kind of in a kind of a healthy spiritual way. And just so that, you know, that the married couple is on the same page, like, hey, you know, maybe one person in the marriage feels that, you know, giving to the church is, you know, so important to them that they want to give more than maybe the other spouse, or, you know, maybe one person in the marriage is not as comfortable with the other, as the other about debt, you know, or, yeah, maybe one is more of a saver than the other. But, you know, going through that Bible study together with Chris, I think we were able to just, it gave us an opportunity to just very openly talk to one another about finances. And it really allowed us to just be on the same page. And if there were, you know, any disagreements or, you know, any issues, that was a good way for us to kind of talk through those things.
Oh, so you were just giving a lot of good examples and advice for married couples. Is there anything that you can share for single people?
So I think for single people, it's, you know, generally the same stuff. It's just, I guess you have a little bit easier situation because you don't have a spouse to, you know, maybe where there's differences. But that being said, I mean, I think this is applicable for both singles and married. You know, budgeting, I think, is always a good idea. You know, knowing kind of where your money is going. You know, I guess developing kind of a plan, being intentional. Whether you're single or married. I think for single people, I guess what I would say is, start developing good habits. Whether it's, you know, getting into a consistent rhythm of offering to the church, or whether it's developing a plan to get out of debt, start developing those habits when you are, when you're able to do so. I think, I mean, the truth of the matter is things get a little bit more complicated when you are married. You have, you know, just, you could have two very different philosophies, and, you know, finances is one of those things that causes a lot of, you know, fights and even divorce in marriage. And so if you do, you know, develop good habits, I think that's helpful.
You're also mentioning, you and Chris were doing, the Bible study. Is there any other type of resources, books, or it could be even like a sermon series that you could think of?
The Bible study that we did was Crown Financial. I think it's been bought out a couple of times, so I don't know if what we did even exists anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mentioned Dave Ramsey earlier on, and I guess from a practical standpoint, you know, I think he's fine in terms of a personal finance person. I'm sure there are some people out there that will disagree with that, and that's fine. I mean, I don't think that's, you know, I don't think his philosophy is gospel or anything. I think he has good principles, so you can always, you know, and that's, you can always buy his book, but, you know, you could also listen to his radio show for free. In terms of books, I don't know. I know that the church, this is a little bit before my time, I know the church went through the treasure principle with Randy P. Alcorn. So I trust our elders that would be a good resource. I mean, lately I've been reading more about, in terms of the finance area, I've been reading more about kind of church finance stuff. So I don't know that I have any personal finance stuff off the top of my head.
Sounds good. And lastly, just to kind of top it all off, if you could just spend the next couple of minutes, just words of encouragement, whether it's finance related or not, just things that have been on your mind or in your heart lately, that you just want to share with our audience.
Sure. I mean, I think we are right now, in May 2020, if this is, so we are in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. And for our church in particular, I think many of us are fortunate to be in situations where, we can continue to work. We aren't necessarily losing our jobs. That being said, there are certainly many of us who have either been furloughed or have taken pay cuts or maybe even lost our jobs. And we do know of some of our members who have been laid off. So, you could be in either of those situations. But whatever situation you are in, I guess right now during this pandemic, I think it's a good time to reflect on your view of finances. I think for those of us who have been fortunate, take the time to thank God for being gracious to you, to find favor upon you and your family, and really use that to think about how to be a better steward, since He has blessed you with, these things and allowed you to maintain, your resources. For those of us who have been either furloughed, laid off, or maybe even taken a pay cut, again, I think it's a good time for us to reflect on what it means for us to be reliant on God and not necessarily on finances. Take a moment to reflect how this has affected you, if at all, in terms of your response to any loss of income. Don't get me wrong, that's, we should be sad and maybe even frustrated at times or even angry. But I think it's a good time for us to reflect why we're feeling these emotions, and try to examine our hearts to make us, more reflective and more appreciative of what we do have, and try to be more trusting in the Lord. And I will say a practical thing for those of us who might be in a little bit more difficult financial situation due to the COVID pandemic, please reach out. This is not something where, we should be ashamed or we should feel embarrassed. We are a church family. And if you are in a situation where, you might be in some financial need, please reach out. Certainly we can pray for you, but we can also, try to help you, whether it's, another brother or sister buying a meal for you or, bringing you groceries or whatever the case may be. I think that's what the church family is for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, we want to be able to help one another. And so, don't let the opportunity for a fellow brother or sister to minister to you go by, and really try to allow others to serve you, and again, try to not be, don't, it's nothing to be embarrassed about, nothing to be ashamed about. I think it allows our brothers and sisters to serve one another.
Amen. Well, thanks, Danny, so much for doing this. We really appreciate just all the effort that you've given to our church. We've been so blessed to have you as our elder. Thank you so much. Thanks again.
Well, thank you for putting this together. It was a pleasure.
Well, that's it for this month. Thanks so much, guys. See you later. Bye.